Welcome to the fifth episode of the Socialist Rifle Association podcast. This is your host, Alex Junga, and we've got a few things to talk about this week. First among them, the organization was featured on public radio for the first time, to my knowledge. I was given the opportunity to go on air with Dave Graham on WDEV Radio in Vermont. We were able to talk about the organization, what we're doing, what some of our thoughts and beliefs are. It was a great time. Really glad to have been able to do that. I think it was pretty beneficial, putting our message out there to a broader audience, as always. Definitely an experience I'd like to do again, and if there are any other opportunities that come up, I hope I'm able to learn from this time. There were a few things that were learning experiences, but hopefully next time we do this, I'll be more prepared than ever. First on the news agenda is the protests in Portland that happened this past week. The groups Patriot Prayer and the Proud Boys were staging demonstrations in Portland over the weekend, coinciding with the approximate anniversary of Charlottesville and the actions that happened there with the far right and neo-Nazis, Confederate sympathizers, fascists, those sorts of people that held that rally and the violence that broke out from that. Now, this was no Charlottesville. The police in Portland were much better prepared and equipped. However, their actions have drawn a lot of controversy, as there is quite a bit of evidence and quite a bit of videos circulating that show them acting more as a defensive group for the far-right protesters and acting against and aggressively against the counter-protesters on the left. Now, there are videos showing that it appears the police began opening fire with various non-lethal munitions, such as stun grenades, after a bit of a disturbance in the crowd. There was no fighting at that point. The police had cornered off the two groups away from each other, so there was no physical altercations going on. However, police claim that people began throwing rocks, bottles, and unknown chemicals at them after the counter-protesters were ordered to disperse. When the crowd did not immediately disperse, they began shooting stun grenades into the crowd. A man actually was shot in the head with a stun grenade. He was wearing a biker helmet at the time and was able to survive. It banged him up pretty good, but he did survive. To the best of my knowledge, he is recovering. However, if he had not been wearing that helmet, it would have been a lethal shot. There's some unflattering pictures you can find on social media going around of the police's reaction after seeing a man getting shot in the head. Their actions are under review. The chief of police in Portland is saying that she takes all these things very seriously and that she'll do a thorough review. We'll see if anything comes of that. I really doubt much will. Unfortunately, these things have a tendency of being buried under the covers. Naturally, there's a lot of folks out there right now that feel that these police officers were actively sympathizing with or coordinating with the far-right protesters. How much evidence of that is out there is yet to be seen. I've seen some stuff on Twitter that there's some police officers that were definitely not saying very flattering things about the counter-protesters. And from their actions, it definitely appears that the city, at very least, was looking to protect the far-right protesters more than the counter-protesters, as the far-right protesters did have access to things like buses that the police actively protected and escorted. The groups such as the Portland DSA and the Oregon ACLU have made statements to the effect of something has to be done. Again, I'm not really hopeful that things will be done. These things have happened before with very little change. There's always time for something to be different, but I'm not seeing this time being any different. Until there is a much greater protest and demonstration against these actions, against the government actively sanctioning and seemingly condoning these things and working for far-right individuals against leftist protesters and counter-protesters, that's pretty disturbing. Not gonna lie, that's pretty disturbing. But this is nothing new. The government has always been in a position where even if the current ruling elite do not approve of these fascist ideas, they are still much more afraid of leftists then they are fascists. This goes back all the way to the early 1900s when we saw police and military and the National Guard being used against labor demonstrators and labor unions. Back then, they would literally shoot people in their makeshift homes. That was how bad things were back then. Now we just shoot people with stun grenades, apparently. After the events in Portland, further demonstrations happened in Berkeley, California the next day that was not as large as the demonstrations in Portland. However, the police once again in Berkeley acted against the leftist counter-protesters. Smoke and rubber bullets were used against the counter-protesters. The police claim, as they always do, that counter-protesters were throwing objects at them, rocks, bottles, whatever. Approximately 20 people were arrested as a result of this. Even as that was going on the West Coast, Discord, the popular gaming chatting service, was subpoenaed for chat logs concerning Charlottesville from last year. So Discord was used as a service to coordinate and organize by various far-right fascist groups in the lead-up to Charlottesville. It was a popular service for that, but it's become a pretty popular chatting service in its own right, so that's not necessarily indicative of anything on the platform. It's just a convenient platform for people to talk. The subpoena is for those particular group chats these individuals were involved in. Some of them are protesting this subpoena. One of the individuals involved in the case is debating on whether or not to appeal the subpoena. I don't think they've actually officially made a determination if they're going to appeal yet or not. Supposedly, the information will remain confidential to the court. However, past examples of this have shown that that data can be leaked or released or just not be held to a very high confidential standard. So we can hope that this court case goes along and that there's some light shed on these individuals and their goings-on, as well as maybe some justice for what happened in Charlottesville. But this also serves as a handy reminder to those of us on the opposite end of the spectrum that even though the government is being forced to go after these fascist individuals because they have caused so much trouble, we can't forget that the government will, in a heartbeat, go after leftists as well, and probably on more trumped-up charges or on less evidence than it's taken to get these far-right individuals scrutinized by the court system. We can look at history and see programs like COINTELPRO that specifically targeted leftists and socialists and communists here in America and all the things that were done about that. So it's a good reminder that most things online can be subpoenaed by a court. So don't say stupid things online thinking that nobody's ever going to see it outside your little group. Definitely don't say illegal things online. Try not to do illegal things in general. That's just good life advice, I think. But there are options out there for encrypted communications, which are harder for prying eyes to see. Not as many, just because of how hard it is to do encrypted distributed communication. But there are options out there that if you want to increase your own personal operational security, then definitely go look into those options. On the topic of operational security, Reddit was hacked recently. The company released a statement saying that they were hacked in June this year. They said an old backup between 2005 and 2007 was taken in the hack. So any account details from that time, which would be over 11 years old now, any account details would be compromised in this hack if it was between 2005 to 2007. If you haven't changed your password in 11 years, please change your password. Please change your password more often than 11 years. 11 years is a little bit long time to go without a password change. Preferably, you should be changing your password probably on an annual basis. I don't much like those websites that force you to change your password every like 60, 90 days. That's a little overkill. But changing it on an annual basis is a good idea on the basis that sites do get hacked. Sometimes sites get hacked without them knowing. Sometimes sites get hacked, the site knows, and they don't tell you. So who knows where your password is floating around out there. Hopefully it's been hashed and salted, but you never know with how poor the security regimens on some of these companies are. So please change your passwords. Please use strong passwords. A strong password doesn't have to be crazy. Strong password mainly is just a long password, 16 characters or more. Add entropy to it. You can have words in there. The whole dictionary attack thing isn't as big of an issue as people sometimes make it out to be. Try to change the words up a little bit, though, in a way that you'll remember. Slang is usually a good thing because it's going to be more resistant to a dictionary attack. Also, use two-factor authentication, but please use it through a on-site code generator, like your phone or a little pen drive that can generate keys for you. Please don't use SMS two-factor authentication, because that is very unsecure. People can spoof SIM cards all day long. People can call up phone carrier customer service and get your number switched all day long. People have done it tons of times. The carriers just don't want to increase their security on this for some reason, even though your phone number is increasingly tied to who you are on the internet because of so many different accounts that require a phone number. So please use two-factor authentication. Use something that you physically possess for it, like a phone, like something on your phone, an app that generates keys, or a pen drive that generates keys. Pen drives that can generate keys are more secure. Hardware options are generally more secure than software options when it comes to this, but they're all still more secure than SMS two-factor authentication. So as you're trying to search the internet for ways to make your online personal security more secure, the Venezuelan president is looking at ways to make himself more secure against exploding drones, apparently. So on Sunday, Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro had an attempted assassination via explosive drones. Two explosive drones were sent to a large gathering he was speaking to, a military parade, I believe, that he was giving a speech to the military members present when two explosive drones flew overhead. Apparently, one malfunctioned in the air, the other crashed into an apartment building. Both were carrying approximately 1 kilogram of C4 high explosive. Maduro received no injuries. There were some shrapnel injuries to the military service members below, but none of them were critical. They're all recovering, to the best of my knowledge. Now, there's no direct evidence at this time that the U.S. or the Colombian government were involved in this attempt. The responsibility for the attacks were taken by a group called Soldiers That Wear T-Shirts, or as Google Translate says, flannel soldiers. This is a fringe insurrectionary group, probably financed by opposition groups within Venezuela. Now, while there is no direct evidence that either the American or the Colombian government were involved, it's not much of a stretch right now that we have had stories of saying that Trump has been asking, why can't we just invade Venezuela? And those stories have said that the Defense Secretary Mattis, Jim Mattis, has told Trump, no, that'd be a very bad idea, but there are other things we can do. So given America's historical involvement in Central and South America, especially when it comes to overthrowing leaders down there of the leftist persuasion, it's not too much to say that we might have had something to do with that, but there's no evidence, so I can't go out there and say, oh, well, definitely. But at the same time, we have to learn from history, and history tells us that when these things happen, usually there's some U.S. government agencies poking around. It does give us a reminder, though, of the changing technological landscape. This isn't necessarily something that's strictly leftist, but we must be aware, as leftists, of how technology is changing, and we have to continually incorporate this into how we think of the world. A few years ago, explosive consumer drones would have been science fiction. We've had military drones for a while, but it's only been very recently that the consumer market for drone aircraft has really taken off. And so this, of course, goes beyond just leaders of other countries having attempted assassinations by exploding drone. It's also that as technology changes, everyone has to keep up with it, be it the government, be it us, be it society at large. Everyone has to keep up with it and update their policies and their beliefs and their procedures and their ideologies accordingly. But even as the technological landscape changes, the economic landscape is going along suit with it. It was in the news this week that Apple became the first company to receive a $1 trillion valuation. So they now have a $1 trillion market cap based on their current stock price of around $207 per Apple stock. Its next largest competitor in this sense is Amazon, with a $777 billion market cap. Alphabet, which is Google, at $766 billion, Microsoft at $750 billion, and Facebook at $541 billion. This really shows the economy has gone not only crazy with stock valuations, but that those top five companies are all tech-based companies. These are all companies that really have a ton of their services in this intellectual property world, where they're not necessarily selling products as much. You can still buy the Apple iPhone, of course, but the Apple iPhone is not a powerful tool because it has a lot of fancy computing power. It does. It's very fast. It's faster than the first computer I owned, a desktop computer. Much faster, in fact. But its true power comes from all the applications and all the services on it and the ecosystem around it and all that intellectual property that Apple controls and uses. And so as leftists, we have to consider that just as Marx in the 1850s was discussing factories and the industrial world, we must grapple with a changing economic landscape where it's increasingly a matter not of seizing the means of production as in factories, but in terms of intellectual property. It is now, quite honestly, a lot of what people can think up and imagine and create that is driving the economy now, rather than the sheer manufacturing, turning raw resources into refined goods sort of economic system. It also shows us how the wealth gap continues to increase with these companies, that one might not think about it at first, but stock valuations is a big way of how the rich and these executives of these companies increase their own net worth by drastic amounts. Now, of course, stock options have been around for a while, and many employees for these companies can get them even when they are not in executive level positions. It's not unheard of for a Silicon Valley company to offer its lower employees stock options. It's quite common from what I understand. But these stock options really apply the principle of it takes money to get money, because not only because of compound interest, not only because of compound interest and dividends, but because as a lower employee, you are going to be naturally offered less stock than a higher level employee, such as an executive. So if you get, for the sake of simplicity, we'll say an Apple stock is $200 and you as an employee are offered one Apple stock a year. So you get $200 in Apple stock a year, a pitifully low amount, but we'll make the math easy for us. So you're getting one $200 stock a year. And then the corporate executive is getting 1,000 Apple stock a year at the same value you are. So you get $200 worth of Apple stock and they get $200,000 worth of Apple stock. Well, if we see a 10% gain on this, for you to take your $20 of realized gains and reinvest it and make something out of that, than it is for them to reinvest it and make something out of that. Just because the numbers are bigger. Just because that's how exponentials work. That's how compound interest works. If you have a greater principal, it's going to grow much more, and regardless of the rate it's at, you can still be, everyone can have the same growth rate, but if you're starting out at 20, you're not going to catch up. And of course, in the real life, these numbers are much more wildly exaggerated. We're talking millions and millions and millions of dollars in stock options. And so this encourages corporate executives to grow the stock at all costs so that they can sell off their stock, make a tidy profit at the cost of the company, at the cost of the workers in the company. What drives stock price up is not necessarily what's best for the company or what's going to ensure long-term growth in the company. It's just whatever makes the value go up at the time. Unfortunately, this drives a lot of really predatory practices within corporate executives, and it can have very serious consequences. If the company mismanages its money, that means that workers can be laid off. It's never going to be executives that are laid off, and if they are, then they have golden parachutes written into their working contracts for themselves. So the rich get richer, the poor get poor. Same old story as has been since the dawn of time, except for the few times that the workers were able to take matters into their own hands and try to negotiate that down. Unfortunately, over the years, those efforts have been eroded, as they always are, if they do not receive constant attention. And that's kind of thing that's difficult for people, is the fight never ends. You always have to be vigilant against these people, because they will take whatever they can. So you have to constantly maintain your guard and constantly be ready to fight and negotiate for what is right. Well, we're going to round this episode of the podcast off with a lightning round. So we're going to have two little stories that I'll talk about real briefly. The first is that Trump has been tweeting about California. Now, this might not seem very strange. Trump tweets about everything that comes to his mind, and I'm sure California is on his mind quite a bit. However, as some of you might know, a lot of California is on fire right now. They're having some really bad blazes. People have been evacuated, forests have been burned down, that sort of thing. It's very dry there right now. But Trump was tweeting about how the rivers are flowing into the ocean, and how California's environmental laws don't allow them to fight fires because all that water is just flowing off into the ocean, and why aren't we using that water that's flowing off the ocean? So what Trump is describing is what rivers are. Rivers are usually found starting in mountains, and they flow down the side of the mountain and through the landscape, and then they flow into the ocean because that's how gravity works. Water rolls downhill, so it will eventually find either a low area, which will create an inland lake, or it'll find the ocean. It'll find one of those two things. That's how water works. So Trump accurately described how rivers work. That yes, rivers flow to the ocean, or lakes, sometimes. However, there is no Californian law prohibiting people from using the water from the rivers to extinguish fires. The problem with the Californian fires that are going on right now is they're too massive to fight. When a fire gets to a certain point, you just can't put it out anymore. You just kind of have to control it and try to get it to burn things that aren't as important until it burns itself out. There is no environmental law in California prohibiting firefighters from using water sources to fight the fire. Now, there are rules about how much water can be used for farms, and this is something that farmers have been talking about in California, that they don't have enough water. This is a genuine issue, but also ignores the fact that the Nestle Corporation and other bottling water corporations get very cheap water at little to no cost to them. They get this water to purify, supposedly, sometimes they don't even do that, and bottle up for resale. This is an absurdly lucrative and profitable practice. That's the real issue here, is Nestle bottling water in a state that's had years of drought. Not that firefighters can't draw water from the rivers to fight the fire. Sorry, Trump, you've missed the ball on this one, like so many other things. And then to close out this lightning round, Canada's foreign minister sent a tweet out to Saudi Arabia speaking ill of Saudi Arabia's arrests of activists in their capital. As some of you may know, Saudi Arabia is a very repressive monarchy in the Middle East. They have very out-of-date laws, we're going to go ahead and say. So Canada's foreign minister was saying, hey, maybe you shouldn't arrest social activists that are trying to reform your laws. She sent that out as a tweet. Saudi Arabia responded by expelling Canada's ambassador, removing their staff from Canada's capital, and generally being jerks about it because they can't take any sort of criticism because they are a authoritarian monarchy. And you can't speak ill of them without risking very severe punishment. It's also worth noting that Saudi Arabia currently sits on the United Nations Committee on Human Rights. even as they were recently praised for liberalizing their laws and allowing women to drive. This is something that the rest of the world was figuring out in the 1920s. Saudi Arabia is now getting along with the times. From the leftist perspective, leftists have historically opposed monarchies. Monarchies are not conducive to leftism. So I don't think it's too controversial of a statement to say that maybe Saudi Arabia should stop with its completely regressive regime and maybe become a more modern democracy, preferably a leftist one. Well, that rounds out the episode for today. I hope you guys enjoyed. We're trying to keep this on a leaky schedule. We'll see how long I can manage that. I'm still working on getting additional segments like guest speakers and stuff like that. Maybe having conversations and panels on different topics, because there's only so much I can talk to myself about, as it were. But we're going to keep humming along just the same. And until next time, seize the means production.